Accession number 18502, Reel 2.
Ask on Reel 2.
Right. Well, they sent me back to this place, which was like a ring of sandbags, and this dentist, or officer, I suppose, got his pliers out and what have you, stuck a needle in and took me teeth out then, and wasn't much hygiene about it. All the lorries are going by and tanks are going by and the dust was pouring in, and I just sat on this box and he pulled me teeth out there and then.
Did it hurt?
No, he gave me cocaine, you know, with a needle. Well, I suppose it did hurt, the needle going in, but afterwards, you know. But it was better than the teeth ache, because I'd had that for about 3 or 4 days, you know. And nobody could sort of do anything about it until some bright spark came up with the idea. They knew where there was a dentist. And I carried the lift back and I got it fixed up. But that was the only illness I had other than the diarrhea. Like I said, you know. These days, it is marvellous when you're just 19. And there, we sustained all the... We were wet. I mean, if you get wet here, you get a cold or a pneumonia, don't you? I mean, out there, you slept, you were soaking wet, and you're just gone with it.
Did you have much to do with the Korean civilians?
No. We did. There weren't many. There weren't many about. The only really... majority of civilians I saw was on my way up to this is what they called the sharp end. We went through Seoul, and that had been bombed, and it was all on fire, and there was all the people running around, you know. But we were just going through on a lorry. So, with that, except for the time they gave us 3 days' leave, they sent us back to a place called Incheon, which was a port. Which was a rest camp, and some were lucky enough to go to Tokyo in Japan, but it was mostly the older chaps, the reservists and that, who got that nice little deal. The rest of us, the youngsters, were sent to this camp in Incheon, but it wasn't much of a rest because they bombed the harbour every night. So the only thing was that you slept on a bed in sheets. And these little Korean girls, about 15, used to bring around the tea in the morning. You know.
Did you ever come near to the fighting?
Not really. The only thing that I never... you could see them on the hill, because they used to wear sort of like a white uniform. You could see them moving about on the hill across the valley. That they would shell us and mortar us, and we would do vice versa. But it was very, very quiet after that big battle, because I think they must have lost. From what I've heard, you know, that they attacked with about 30,000 men, and... So a lot of those must have got killed, because, I mean, say they never overrun the Gloucesters for about 4 days, did they? You see, so they must have lost quite a few. But, I mean, a lot of those, from what we know about it, half of them didn't have rifles anyway. They expected one half to get killed and the other half to pick the rifles up and keep going, you know. But no, I never saw, only in the distance.
You told me earlier of an occasion when you were nearly hit by our own fire. Can you repeat that on the tape, please?
Yeah, well, we were told to go up to the listening post on the river because it had gone dead. And we got there and we reconnected the line, but we carried on because they were nearer to us than what where we'd left to get some... get a drink and some food, and we'd had that, and we sort of went over and sat down in a foxhole with an American, because we couldn't understand why he was there, and had a chat to him, and I suppose he must have been sat there for about an hour, and we fell asleep. Next thing we know, it starts to be shelled. We didn't know which way they were coming, and anyway, we looked around for the chaps that had been at the listening post, and they long gone. They'd gone. They must have had the message to pull back, because it was our own guns, which were shelling the river. So we got out of there a bit quick, and we've got to get away from that. You know, it was a bit dicey.
Was that the only time that that happened?
Yeah. When it was the shelling, we went to another escapade like that where there was a listening post, and we were just coming up on the listening post, and we fell in front. McNelly was making so much noise. He didn't hear them call it the password. Luckily for me, I did hear him, and I gave the other half, and we were able to get through into the listening post. But they said, you were lucky that we didn't shoot you, but you were luckier still because you just walked through a minefield. They mined it all the way round, the back of the mine, the listening post, you know, so nobody could get through, but we followed the telephone wire and walked right through it. But thank goodness we didn't have many experiences like that, you know.
Did you ever see any of the enemy close up?
No.
Any prisoners?
No.
Or they're dead?
Yeah, we saw the dead floating down the river. I don't know what that occasion was. I can't remember. I can remember seeing them float. I said, look at all those logs. And they said, it's not logs, it's blokes. They're Chinese. So they must have been killed further up the river, and then they floated down past us, you see.
So you joined the battalion on the Imjin, and then you moved up north through Seoul, did you?
No, I went through Seoul. We were about 20 miles. That was where the Gloucesters held at the Imjin River Battle. They were on the main area, or road, shall we say, because there weren't much roads, to Seoul. And they held the main approaches to Seoul when that big battle took place. So we were 20 miles north of Seoul. And that was where when I came through Seoul to join the regiment, I saw the population and what had happened in Seoul.
So were you on the Imjin all the time? You were in Korea? In the
land? We're on the south side where the battle took place. And then they moved. There was no fighting or anything. The Chinese had withdrawn. So they went across the river, advanced across the river, and formed another line. But I really can't tell you who was on the right or who was on the left, because you're just in your own area, and you don't know what's really going on. You know, nobody tells you anything, unless if you're on the radio, but they ain't going to tell you much on the radio what's going on.
How many months do you think you're in Korea for?
It's from that April round to the end of November, when the regiment came home. I came home with the regiment. We pulled out. I think the Welsh regiment came in and took over our positions.
Were you glad to leave Korea?
Oh yeah.
Had it been a completely miserable time for you?
Well, I wouldn't say miserable. It was miserable at times, but worrying. You know, worrying as to whether. When the Chinese attacked, they just didn't come in a few numbers. They came in vast numbers, you see. And from what they told me, there's no stopping them. No stopping them, because once they come, there's so many of them. You can't kill them all, can you? You see, that's what they said. So then you never knew when that was going to happen.
Did you have any lighter moments or entertaining moments in Korea?
Well, Ethel Rednor, she came out with another lady and gave us a concert. We had to go back to one of the echelons, and I was lucky enough to get the opportunity to go back. Of course, you couldn't all walk away and go back to see this, you know. And on another occasion, Jack Warner actually came right up to the front line to see us. And he just had a chat, and then he was gone. But other than that, except for a Welsh choir, which again we had to go back to one of the echelons to hear it, and of course I managed to wangle that and get there and see that, you see.
Did you appreciate these entertainments?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, it was pretty humdrum and boring, shall we say. Boring. The nights were the worst, you know. If you're on a radio and you're in the dugout and there's nobody with you, you've got to sit in that dugout in the dark, or maybe with just a torchlight bulb, and stay awake. And that's the hardest job, to stay awake. I mean, every morning, if you weren't awake during the night and you managed to get some sleep at night, you'd stand to at dawn. Everybody stood to at dawn in case the Chinese did attack, you know. But most of the time I was out on the line, because they were getting broke all the time.
Were there any songs that you sang in Korea?
No. Oh, one thing they did do, they which was pretty near, it was in the battalion HQ, they got one of these big JCBs, I don't know if they had JCBs in those days, and they carved out a great big dip in the ground, and then cut down trees and put trees across it. And then one of our officers got a crate of whiskey and went out to the Americans, got a projector off of them, and got some film off of them. One film, The Lullaby of Broadway with Doris Day. And I don't know how many times I saw that, because you could sneak down into this trench, because they let so many each time see it, you see. But because I was in battalion HQ, we had more opportunity than the others, because they were dug in on the front line, see. And battalion HQ could be so many hundred yards behind that, you see. So when they'd have this, even though things were going on, we got used to all these sorts of things going on, and we took the enjoyment we could, you know. But it was pretty humdrum.
What opinion did you form of the Americans and the other Allied troops?
Well, I didn't see them. We just didn't see them. We were in our own little patch on our own sector. I just saw this one American up on this on the gym, on this listening post. But we had some Canadians. We were up on a very high profile ground, you know, and they had an artillery listening post, the Canadian artillery, which were behind us, and so we had these Canadians, which we would talk to endlessly about one thing or another, you know.
How did you get on with them?
Oh, great. They were fine.
How do you feel now in 1998 about having served in Korea?
I thought it did me a lot of good. Taught me to look after myself and think for myself and get on with it. Whatever you got to do, just get on with it. teach you to stand on your own two feet, and you know, you just got to get on with it. No matter what happens, you got to get on with it. No good blaming somebody else.
So once you got back to England, were you then demobbed?
I came back to England in December, and we went to Warminster Camp, an infantry school there, and I got demobbed in October 1952. Yeah.
Did you ever get any desertions?
Yeah. There was two or three that deserted, but I just don't know where they thought they were going to go. They caught them, brought them back, and they would go back to Seoul and do a prison sentence, and then still do the time they lost on the prison sentence back in the up at the sharp end, as they called it. That it was just useless. I mean, you just had to get on with it, you know. But I think some of them caught malaria, and they really didn't know what they were doing.
Were they the deserters who caught malaria?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason why they should go and do it, you know what I mean? Because it wasn't... Well, I mean, you could have been killed the next day, but it wasn't like the First World War where you went over you had to go over the top and thousands of them got killed, sort of thing, you know. It was nothing like that, you see. It could be dangerous at times, you know. But of course, we never knew what was going to happen, whether the Chinese were going to attack us again. And you wouldn't be able to hold that number of them.
Did you know the deserters personally?
No.